How much of this is you guys...
We don't have a pretty good guy.
I know, agree. But I'm saying, how much...
We hadn't had him for the whole year. So, yeah.
I mean, it's obviously a little hard to gauge the progress that you guys have made. Do you feel
It's not hard to make progress. I mean, to judge the progress, because I thought, you know, the last, you know, probably 16, 18 minutes of that game, we played exactly how we needed to play.
Hello, welcome into Birdwatch, New Orleans Pelicans podcast powered by NOLA.com. I'm your host, Christian Clark, here with sports producer slash super utility man. I think I'm just going to start calling you utility man.
That works.
Do a thousand different things here for us at NOLA.com. Jeff Nowak.
How's it going, y'all?
Jeff, for the first time all season, we get to talk about a basketball team that's playing well. It's been a long couple of weeks. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was a little beaten down during that 13-game losing streak. I don't mind admitting that. That just got really tough. But here the Pelicans are. They've won four games in a row. They're 3.5 or 3.5 games back of the eighth seed in the West, which is one a testament to just, you know, how bad the West is 7 through 15 this year. But they're playing pretty well. They're having fun. You know, morale is as high as it's been all season. You know, I guess I kind of want to get into how real do you think this turnaround is?
Well, first, I do think the Western Conference is so bizarre this year. And I think the NBA in general, we talked about this, is like it's a weird season because you're talking about these two like hegemons, like these two massive franchises that you're expecting to be great teams when Durant comes back healthy, when Curry comes back healthy, and Klay Thompson. And then next year, it's going to be a paradigm shift again. But right now, the West, 1 through 15, even the Warriors aren't out of it at 9-25. I mean, the top end, you have, you know, through the Jazz, the top six seeds, they're pretty strong. But then 7 and 8, you're looking at 17-15, 13-18.
Yeah, like, I mean, look, I probably wouldn't bet in it, but there is a real possibility that the Pelicans make the playoffs. And I don't think I'm seeing that through my... I don't know, what colored glasses would you say if you're a Pelicans
Mardi
fan?
Mardi Gras colored glasses, which is really just drunk goggles. But no, I mean, 3.5 games at any point, you're in that race. Like, the difficulty is there's, what, six teams in that, eight teams, including the two in the race. So, they would not only have to make up 3.5 games, they would have to be better than the teams in front of them. They would need all of those teams to maintain that pace, which they won't. I mean, the Blazers, I think, are playing much better basketball than 14-20. The Spurs are the Spurs. They'll figure it out. The Thunder, I think, with Chris Paul, will figure it out. The Kings are a good basketball team. They should not be 12-21. The Timberwolves, I actually don't think they're going to get any better. I think that they're broken.
But, yeah, I have a hard time just seeing them finish ahead of Portland unless, like, something happens to Dame. I mean, I just have so much faith in Dame that... I don't know. I think it'd be hard for them to make up that ground, but...
I think the only way they make up that ground on Portland, I think Portland will be a playoff team, is if the Pelicans only played the Trailblazers, because it seems like, for whatever reason, them and the Nuggets, if the Pelicans played an 82-game season against just the Blazers and the Nuggets, they might go 82-0. I don't understand why those two teams, they just have their number, and then there's so many teams they come out and just, like, they just look lost. But they've played four games against two teams that, well, the Blazers aren't in the playoff field right now, but, and those four games have been their best games of the season, and they've dominated those games.
So I think my short answer to, you know, the question of how real is this turnaround, I would say pretty. Look, the Pelicans have benefited from injury luck, which is nice because they got screwed over by that beginning part of the season. The Timberwolves didn't have Karl Anthony Towns. Indiana didn't have Malcolm Brogdon. Houston didn't have Harden, Russ, or Capella. I mean, they really needed to win that game, and I'm glad they played well in the fourth quarter because they would have felt awful if they hadn't.
Seven of their 11 wins have come against a team without one or more of their stars.
Okay.
So when you talk about, is it real? I think the turnaround is real because, you know, they're not winning these games 130-120. They're winning them on the defensive end, and just intensity on that side is not a mirage. You know, Favors returning has really kind of buttoned up a lot of the defensive issues, a lot of the rotational issues that you saw. And, you know, they're not just, You know, I said in the beginning of the season, you don't need elite defense out of this team to win games. You need a, you know, average defense because they're going to score. They have scorers. And in this last four games, you've actually seen elite defense, which is bizarre to think about compared to the beginning of the season. I think they've benefited from some really cold shooting.
Yeah, but. Yeah. And, you know, the Pelicans are, I think, number two in defensive efficiency over the past six games. What you just said is true. Opponents are shooting 28% from three over that stretch. That's just the ebbs and the flows of the season. That's not a sustainable mark. But I do think that they can be somewhere between slightly above average and average on the defensive end for the rest of the year. Obviously, that, you know, a huge part of that is contingent on Derek Favors' health. I've been tweeting out these numbers after past couple games, but the Pelicans are now 6-2 when Derek Favors plays 25 or more minutes. They're 4-0 when he plays 30 plus minutes. You know, I said all year that I think he's for sure the third most valuable player on this team behind Jrue Holiday and Brandon Ingram. I think I said you could even make the case he's the second most valuable player. It's probably a little bit too hot of a take, but I think he's comfortably the third most important player on this team, and definitely the most important player on this team on the defensive end. I think what we've seen this year is that you can have, you know, really good perimeter defenders, but it doesn't mean that much if your center, your back line of defense, your center fielder, whoever on the defensive end isn't there. I mean, Favors is just so important for what this team does in defensive end.
And as much as you like watching Jackson Hayes play, if he's out there and when the rotation was him and Okafor, there was just a lot of ugly moments. Even having Favors back be just a mind to help Jackson Hayes as he's developing is super important. I don't know. There's just so much to watch with this team. I still think that the Pacers game was the single best win of the season for this team. Even though it came at home, it came in the middle of that streak.
Better than Denver on Christmas Day?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because like I said, for whatever reason, they seem to always show up against Denver. This is a team that beats the teams they beat. But that was the type of game that if you've watched this team the last 2 years, they lose that game. They come home after a big win, and they lose that game. And then they came out slow. The reason I think that was such a big win is because it was one of the first times this season they didn't start well, but they didn't allow a bad first quarter to become a bad first half. I think they were down 32-19 at the end of the first quarter, and they were up at halftime. And that's the type of bounce back that you need. Like, all NBA teams have bad quarters. Good NBA teams don't have bad halves, at least not consistently. And that's what you saw a lot of the first half of the season for the Pelicans. They got down big in the first half, and they couldn't come back in the second half. This game, they didn't allow that to happen. They corrected the issues in the start of the second quarter, and they were able to take control of that game against a very good Pacers team.
Yeah, yeah. This week on Noah.com, I wrote kind of a film roomy piece with a couple clips from the Pacers game, you know, specifically what Derek Favors is able to do in the defensive end. On the very first play of the game, the Pacers ran a pick and roll with Aaron Holiday and Sabonis, and it was just a perfect example of what Favors gives you in pick and roll defense. He slid over just enough to make sure Holiday, you know, didn't go all the way to the rim, and he's capable of that. And so Holiday, like, threw a bounce pass to Sabonis, and then Favors shuffled over really quickly, like, walled Sabonis off, who's a big, strong, you know, dude with good touch, especially with his left hand, forced him to kick it to T.J. Warren in the corner for a three, and it was, like, a heavily contested shot that hit the side of the backboard. You know, pick-and-roll defense for a big is hard. I mean, and Favors, you know, makes it look really easy, and, you know, I hope Jackson Hayes is just sitting on the sideline, like, taking mental notes of what Fave does in the pick and roll and the way he defends down low. You know, the way he's able to remain vertical without fouling, I think that's one of my biggest gripes with Jackson Hayes' game. And, look, he's 19. He's still learning. I'm not like, trying to bash him or anything like that. But Favors is excels in, you know, exactly the parts of the game that Jackson is still struggling and learning in.
In the pick and roll, to me, it's probably the best example of an NBA construct that you can't say, like, okay, you have to do this, you have to do this. There's so much of it is understanding what you're seeing and playing with your eyes and knowing where you should be. Do you take a quick half step to the left? Do you wall off this defender? Do you wait for help on, you know, coming from the backside? Like, and understanding that is just something that Favors is able to do. He knows where he should be, and knows he has these little subtle defensive movements that make it a lot more difficult to score. Sometimes you're going to have those other teams make the shots anyway, but making them take a difficult shot or take a contested shot versus getting a wide open layup is obviously a big part of why the defense has been better. You know, the points against has been, you know, significantly lower. Points per possession is lower. You know, they're playing a little slower. But, I don't think this was always the plan for Alvin Gentry. I think he's adjusted. But it's been nice to see. It's when you talk about a team that was that bad, because, you know, you have to be really bad to lose 13 games in a row, and you have to adjust. If you're a coach that doesn't want to get fired, you have to adjust to the issues plaguing your team, and I think that they have done that.
Yeah, I think that they can continue to be a good defensive team, you know, even if and when opponents start shooting better from three, and we kind of saw that against Houston, because look, teams just can't score at the rim against Favors like they can with the other two guys in there. And the other thing too is I think Favors is a really good rebounder. I believe the Pelicans are like fifth in rebound percentage over these last six games. And, you know, just by doing those things better, you know, I think the Pelicans can be a much better defensive team than they showed the beginning part of the season. So I would say that this turnaround is fairly real because of those reasons. And, you know, I don't know, what was our Vegas over-under going into the year? Like 37, 38?
38 and a half.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when all is said and done, the Pelicans are going to end up right there, what we all thought going into the season.
Yeah, they would be under 500, but, you know, if they get to that point, if Vegas wins like they always do and has it right on the number, you know, they're probably in the playoffs with 38 wins, the way things are going right now. To me, you know, they have a very tough game coming up, right? They have to go to L.A., they have to play the Lakers. I think that as you look at this and you think, okay, is this winning streak real? I think it is. I think this is the type of this is not a bottom of the Western Conference team. This is also not a top of the Western Conference team. This is a team that should be able to win these games. They should be able to beat Portland and Denver, you know, in a vacuum. Maybe not in a seven-game series, but in a vacuum, they should be able to win a game against them. Now they're going to go out to LA, and that's a tough game. It's going to be another national TV game. There's going to be a lot of emotion behind it. You know, that's Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart all going to play the Lakers in Staples Center for the first time. They've already done it against the Clippers. It's kind of a weird scenario. But they're probably going to lose that game. I mean, that's a game that would be great to win. It'd be great for them to get on a five-game streak and get that run going. But facts being what they are, and Anthony Davis and LeBron, I mean, it's the best team in the West. They'll probably lose. But to me, the biggest game isn't that game. The biggest game for them is the two-game stretch after that, where they go on the road against Sacramento, a tough team that's also had a rough start. But they have a lot of good players. Buddy Hield's really coming into his own, and De'Aaron Fox is going to be a tough matchup. And so they could easily lose that game. They come back home. They play Utah. Utah's another very good team. They could lose that game. So what I'm trying to get to here is this four-game winning streak could very quickly turn into a three-game losing streak. And that's what they need to avoid to become a team that you look at as like, okay, this team could make the playoffs. Because what, to me, separates playoff teams from lottery teams, at least one of the biggest things, is not allowing a loss to become a three-game losing streak, to become a five-game losing streak. And that's something that they have not been able to avoid last season or, you know, even the beginning of this season. They have losing streaks of 4, 3, and 13 games.
Yeah.
That's 20 of their 23 losses have been streak losses. And on the other side, they've had winning streaks of 3 and 4 games. So that means that there are only 7 games this season that weren't part of a winning streak or a losing streak of more than 3 games.
Yeah, oh yeah, there's been a lot of highs and lows. I mean, Scott Kushner wrote his column today about just, you know, kind of zooming out and what an insane 2019 it was for the Pelicans. I mean, just the fact that a team that lost 13 games in a row, a franchise record losing streak, you know, is still kind of in the playoff hunt. And I mean, I haven't checked 538 or anything, but I would, if I had to guess, like, I don't know, 40% odds, I would say, to make the playoffs or something like that. But the fact that it's even within range is just bananas with the losing streak that they had. So, I mean, it was a really interesting year for the Pelicans. Interesting trip out west coming up against the Lakers. That game here in New Orleans was so much fun, but they're finally trending in the right direction. And, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. Maybe I shouldn't be, but I am.
Yeah, I mean, the resiliency of this team to this point has been very impressive. And again, and I brought this up last week, and I'm going to keep bringing it up. You look at things like what happened in Sacramento last week with Buddy Hield coming out and basically saying they don't trust me in the fourth quarter. And, you know, he's not saying it directly, but he's saying this coach is not doing the job. And I can't say strongly enough that this team being able to stay together as well as they have and not having any really visible signs of infighting is remarkable. I mean, how many teams on a 13-game losing streak have you seen that didn't do that? Probably not something you could ever find, but I don't remember one, you know, because there's very few 13-game losing streaks to begin with. But it's the way they bounced back out of that is incredibly impressive. And one of Alvin Gentry's best attributes is the players like him. You know, the players want to play for him. He gets to them. They listen to him when he talks. And it's really easy to take that for granted until you don't have that. Until you have Tom Thibodeau in Minnesota and Jimmy Butler is basically defecting off the franchise. I mean, that's a huge factor. And that's part of the reason that it's really nice to see this team kind of get back into the flow where the fans can get excited about it. I mean, I have season tickets because I like to have them in the upper deck just so I can either give them to family members or do whatever. I wasn't able to get to the Rockets game because I was out, you know, covering the Peach Bowl when I was traveling. But I was able to sell those tickets in the upper deck, I think, for $25 a piece, which...
So not $1.
Right, exactly. My point. Like, they were going... I couldn't sell those for a dollar a few weeks ago. I think it was the Suns game. And this was a game that Harden and Westbrook didn't play it.
Yeah.
And there was still enough interest in the team to go... for someone to go out and buy those. And I sold them low because I couldn't babysit them. I just put them... That's why they sold, because I dropped them below the suggested price or what they were going for in the section. But, like, that's a really good sign, just showing the franchise has some interest coming back and fans are actually getting invested again ahead of, hopefully, a Zion Williamson return.
Yeah, I think that was a really interesting point about that there wasn't infighting or, you know, fracturing in the locker room when they were going through a 13-game losing streak. I think you see that a lot in the NBA. You know, I think that the Pelicans put a premium on getting good guys in here. I think Jrue Holiday is like an A-class person. I think, you know, Brandon Ingram is very well-liked within the locker room. He's a selfless guy. Only thing he cares about is basketball, man. I mean, he's like, you hear stories about him being in the practice facility 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. So I think that was a very astute point that, you know, the ship really could have capsized during that losing streak, and it didn't. So they're pointing in the right direction now. We're going to take a break real quick. And right after that, I want to talk about two of the former Lakers on this team who will be going back to Los Angeles for the first time since the trade. Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram. We'll be right back on Birdwatch.
Lonzo Ball, a triple. Yes, got it! Yes, and he's also got a new career high in threes.
Yes, sir, Lonzo. Rise above the hate, young man.
All right, back here on Birdwatch. Lonzo Ball is coming off a game where he hit 7 threes. If you'd asked me before the season, what do you think Lonzo's like season high in 3 points made a game is, I probably would have said 5. I would have never guessed 7.
I wouldn't even have guessed that his career high was more than 4.
Yeah.
The fact that it was 6 already, and it was his second career game that he hit that in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that game against Houston was by far the best game Lonzo Ball has played as a Pelican. He was retroactively awarded a triple-double. they took 3 assists from Josh Hart and gave them to Lonzo. So, I don't know.
He was so good in that game that they were like, you know what, Lonzo, take these assists. Take these, or were they rebounds?
I think they were assists, yeah.
You're right, yeah.
So yeah, you know.
How do you do that? How do you take assists away from one person and give them to somebody else?
How does
that
even,
I understand rebounds if like it got tipped by one guy or like a steal that was kind of like just there was a bunch of people and one guy came away with it and he changed it and gave it to the other guy. I get that, but like a pass is a pass.
Yeah, I don't know whose job it is at the league office to like go through the film and be like, actually, yeah, this was an assist or this was an assist. But
you know, you think it was the home it was like in baseball when you have a no hitter going and they gave the third baseman an error because it kept the no hitter alive. You think it was kind of like that?
Yeah,
you got the home lean of the scorers table.
Yeah, I mean that was a heck of a game by Lonzo. You know, I get that everybody like wants to talk about the 3-point shooting game after what he did, and I understand that. Lonzo was put in long hours with Pelicans assistant coach Fred Vinton. Actually, when we went into practice today, which is Tuesday, Lonzo and Brandon Ingram are playing like an epic game of around the world. Those two guys are often shooting together with Fred Vinton after practice. But you know, I thought this game was noteworthy too. Lonzo drove the basketball a lot. He pushed the pace in transition, and even in the half court, there was a couple instances of him getting into the teeth of the defense, which is kind of something that I've been preaching all year. Look, I think that, you know, the 3-point shot is a bonus for Lonzo, but I think if we're going to see him be successful, then he's got to keep doing that, where he is controlling the pace. You know, I think Alvin Gentry loved that he played, you know, so fast the other night, and Pelicans had 16 fast break points in the fourth quarter. But for Lonzo to be successful, he's just got to keep going in there. And even if he's not, like, finishing with the layup, just draw the defense toward you and kick it out. He found Etuan Moore a couple times in the fourth quarter doing that against Houston.
Yeah, and Etuan has been great. And Etuan seems to have a really good relationship with everybody in terms of being set up and setting other people up, just on that. And the other thing Lonzo has done in the last few games that has impressed me is, you know, outside of the anything offensively, like, he's been a pest on defense. You know, he's gotten a bunch of just sneaky little steals and started fast breaks that he may not even have been rewarded with a stat on half the time, but they were just plays throughout the game that you look back on and they were defining moments of that game. He had a nice steal on, I believe it was McDermott, that he went in for the layup. But no, I mean, to me, so facilitating is a big thing for Lonzo, and he's shooting 50% from the free throw line, and that's going to be an issue throughout his entire career. You hope at some point he gets better and he gets more confident going to the basket. But it seems like the last few games he hasn't been afraid to go to the basket like it appeared he was early in the season. And I think you see a big product of that in that his decision-making on the shots he's taking, his splits on the shots he's taking, are completely different than they were in the beginning of the season. I pulled out some shooting statistics here that, you know, they might make your eyes glaze over, but I promise I'll do my best. So Lonzo this season on shots between 5 and 14 feet away from the rim. The mid-range shots that everyone in the NBA has kind of decided, this is really not a shot we should be taking. He is shooting 16% on those shots. He's 5 of 30 on shots more than 5 feet from the rim and within 14 feet. So that's basically from like the middle of the key to the free throw line. He's shooting 16%. Don't take those shots. It's that simple. Don't take those shots. Like, there's options available that don't include stopping in the middle of the lane and pulling up. If it's just not something that you're able to do efficiently, it's part of Drew's game. It's part of Etuan's game. They're probably the best combination in the NBA at the little junk floater, which I don't mean junk in terms of bad. I mean, like, it's the type of shot you would keep in that drawer in your kitchen that has, like, yeah, tape and batteries. And that little floater from the middle of the lane. Lonzo's not good at it. Stop doing it. The other one, shots 15 feet to long twos, which it's kind of weird because they measure it 22 to 24 feet, but the three-point line has a break, and so the corner threes are shorter. But so shots in that range that are two-pointers, he has made 7 of 26, so he's 26% on those shots. So on all shots outside of 5 feet that are not three-pointers, he is 12 for 56 on the season. He is shooting 21.4% on those shots. And I think it's actually that simple in terms of shot selection for him to be a more effective and a more efficient player. Stop taking long two-pointers. Take layups and threes and only take the mid-range when you have to. You know, it's impossible to cut it out completely, but it's not impossible to do to knock it down in the range that makes sense. You don't have to go full Austin Rivers. If you combine shots inside 5 feet and short threes, he's 58 for 118 on the season. He's shooting 49% from the field.
Yeah, and just with his shot selection, I know one thing earlier that Alvin Gentry said was he didn't really want to see Lonzo taking threes off the dribble either. He wanted to see him, you know, he's perfectly fine, you know, seeing him take, catch, and shoot threes. You know, I think Lonzo is good at catch and shoot three-pointer. I don't think you want to see him taking those step-back threes or anything, but I thought his shot selection has been really good lately.
Yeah, and the numbers do back that up. On step-back jump shots, which I hate that step-back. That's the ugliest step-back, first of all. It doesn't work. It's just not a good shot. You know, everyone wants to do the step-back because James Harden just makes it look so easy, but it's just not a good shot. And he is 2 for 20 on those shots this season, on step-back jump shots, per the NBA statistics. He's 2 for 17 when those are three-pointers, which 2 for 17 is 11%. On pull-up shots, he is 8 for 29. It's 27%. He's 3 for 10 on threes. If you take away the pull-ups and the step-backs, he is 46 for 101 on three-pointers. That's 45.5%, which is J.J. Redick range. He is an objectively good shooter on catch-and-shoot opportunities.
Yeah.
On corner threes, he's 16 for 38. So he's over 40% on corner threes, which are almost always catch-and-shoot. You know, it's very difficult to create a pull-up jump shot in the corner. So, I mean, I think it's pretty clear. He actually played Austin Rivers the other day, and Austin Rivers has always been, the last few years, the guy who's kind of, like, adopted analytics to the point that he literally doesn't take shots unless they're three-pointers or layups. It's almost like a complex with him at this point, because you could leave him wide open in the middle of the court and he won't shoot it, but he'll dribble and get back 5 feet and take a bad three. If you're overdoing it, you're actually doing the wrong thing, which is you're taking a statistically good shot, but it's a bad shot. If you want to look at his numbers, he has taken 8 shots outside of 10 feet and inside the three-point line on 229 attempts all season. That's 3% of his shots. Lonzo on the season has taken 35 and 274. So that's 12%.
Okay.
In the last four games, which is where we kind of got to, he has only taken 4 of his 53 shots outside of 10 feet and inside the three-point line. So that is 7%. And in that span, you've seen him become a more efficient basketball player and you've seen the team win games. So I think that you're seeing him kind of adapt and kind of understand his role and start to take more efficient and statistically proven shots. And I don't know if that's a conscious change or if that's something Gentry's been pressing him on, but it's clearly something that he's doing. And I don't think it's a coincidence that he's played significantly better now that he's kind of choosing his spots more effectively.
I think one of the other interesting things that's come out of the past few games is, and you know, anybody who's followed the Pelicans for a while, I think, already knows this, but Jrue Holiday, if he, in his perfect world, he would not be the point guard. I think Jrue Holiday prefers to be, you know, the two guard or the off guard or whatever, and have someone handle, you know, the majority of, you bring the ball up and get us into our offense, and hey, I'll just be a secondary attacker. You know, Alvin Gentry, you know, just outright said that after the game the other day, and you know, we asked Jrue about it, and you know, he seemed happy to have Lonzo, you know, handling those point guard duties. So I think the Pelicans, you know, really want Lonzo in the starting lineup to work out this year and maybe even going forward. Jrue and the coaching staff, you know, want him off the ball, and Jrue already has so much on his plate too. I think it's really beneficial for him to not have to do, you know, so much of the heavy lifting. So I think that, you know, if Lonzo can continue to play like this and you know, be a positive in the starting lineup, that'll make Jrue look a little bit better too.
Yeah, I think, you know, Alvin said pretty much that today in his media availability, which was, you know, they're trying to keep Jrue in the low 30-minute range because they're very aware of the weight that he has on him throughout the season. Weight in terms of, like, responsibility, not physical weight like you talked about with Zion. And Frank Jackson's a part of that too. He has this really weird split where he basically plays the last 4 minutes of the first half every game, which is really odd, except I think that's the answer right there, is he's playing because he's trying to keep Drew's minutes within a framework that, you know, you can project over the course of the season. You don't want him to be doing what Kyle Lowry is doing, which is averaging 40 minutes a game right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to see toward the end of the season what happens when you play that amount. You know, but you saw it with Harden in the playoffs a few years ago, where he was clearly just worn down. And that's what they're trying to avoid. And like we said before, this is a team that all of a sudden has playoff hopes. So you have to think about that. But going back to Lonzo, I agree. I think there is a big investment in Lonzo. You see a lot on social media and on Facebook or whatever, people who aren't invested in covering the team but have opinions. And there's this idea that, like, oh, we need to trade Lonzo. We need to get Lonzo out of town. And I don't see that happening. I think that they brought him in for a reason. They want him to be a foundational player on this team.
Yeah, and look, people were really optimistic about his fit here because this is kind of a tailor-made situation for him. I mean, it's low pressure. You know, this is like LA, you know, the Lakers probably have the most media attention in the entire league. This has among the least. And look, Alvin Gentry likes to play up-tempo. That's no secret. And Lonzo Ball was a guy who really thrived playing up-tempo at UCLA. I mean, he was so much fun to watch that 1 year at UCLA when they're playing a million miles an hour. He's pushing every single time, you know, finding TJ Leaf.
He made TJ Leaf an NBA player.
Yeah. Like, TJ Leaf is buried on the Pacers bench, by the way. Yeah. I saw them, like, saying what's up to each other in the hallway before the game. It was pretty funny.
And he was great in college, and, like, Lonzo Ball got him drafted. Like, he was that good that he was able to lift TJ Leaf into, you know, he might have made it anyway. He might have been a late second rounder or a guy who latched on as a free agent somewhere, but Lonzo Ball was, like, independently good enough on that team that he made the other players around him better.
Yeah.
And that's what you were hoping for when he came here. And that's kind of the magic that you're hoping that he can get again when Zion comes back.
Yeah. I mean, that game against the Rockets was really the first game this season where I saw the vision. And, you know, Alvin Gentry said Lonzo controlled the pace exactly how he wants to. What we saw, especially in the fourth quarter when they had 16 fast break points, is exactly the way that Alvin Gentry wants to play with Lonzo Ball at the controls.
It was so refreshing to see them not wilt there, too. I mean, they obviously were playing the ghost of the Rockets. That's the type of game early in the season that they would have wilted. That's the type of game 5 games ago that they would have wilted, because they did against the Warriors. And when you talk about, you know, the differences and actually Lonzo Ball, probably his second best game of the season, was in that Warriors game. The rest of the team kind of just fell on its face, but he didn't play at the end of the game. And there was some criticism around that, which is like, why is Lonzo Ball on the bench after his best career game so far with the Pelicans? And one of the things I think that Gentry has been pushing for, at least me viewing it and why he wasn't in that game, is because I think he just wants Lonzo Ball to string good performances together. I think that so much of an NBA mindset is just not constantly feeling like you're making mistakes. And what he's been able to do the last few games is just string games together. And now the leash gets longer. You know, you see him at the end of the Rockets game, and he's in there in those crunch time minutes, which from the beginning of the season, he basically got none. He was big in the third quarter, and then down the stretch, he wasn't a factor. And he has been the past few games, and that's, I think, the trust level there and the belief that he's going to make the right play is something that, you know, comes with time, and you're seeing it get better and better.
Yeah, yeah. Lonzo had 7 points and 6 assists in the fourth quarter against Houston. Uncle E had 14 points. He played really well. Drew had 12. Brandon Ingram had 8. The Pelicans had 4 guys who scored 25 points or more. I believe it was the first time since the Mavericks did it in 2006. So a really fun ending to that game.
And they won it by scoring. You know, they're not gonna hold teams under 110 points all the time. Like, they need to be able to win both ways. Yeah. And they have been able to do that in the last 4 games. They win the 112-100 game. Then they come out, they win the 127-112 game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This is not going to be a consistently elite defense, but 112 is a winnable total.
Yeah, yeah. That game in Houston, too, Brandon Ingram, he kind of flew under the radar. You know, Lonzo and Etuan, you know, rightfully so, got a lot of the attention, and he still wound up with 27 points. Ingram on Monday earned the first Western Conference Player of the Week award he's ever won in his career. And I just want to kind of zoom out and just try to put into context what Ingram is accomplishing this season. You know, he's averaging 25.3 points per game on a 60.6 true shooting percentage. I did a basketball reference search this morning. He's one of six players ever to post those numbers in his age 22 season or younger. The other guys are Karl-Anthony Towns, Amari Stoudemire, Luka Doncic, Kevin Durant, and Shaquille O'Neal. That's a pretty decent list. When I look at Ingram's season, I mean, look, he's shooting four more times per game this year than he did last year in L.A. You never see somebody increase his volume like this and also, you know, make serious strides with his efficiency. I just can't believe how efficient Ingram has become, you know, all of a sudden and seemingly out of nowhere. You know, he's carrying the scoring load night after night after night, and he's dang near a 50-40-90 guy.
Yeah, and it's really been remarkable to watch how the 2016 NBA draft has developed. You know, and Ingram was the number two pick in that draft, and I think until this year, he would have been classified as a bust. You know, there were a lot of Lakers fans who would point to some of the stretches he had with the Lakers before he got hurt last year was one of them, where he was an elite player, but he was an elite player on a bad team. But I mean, the group as a whole from the 2016 NBA draft has developed into what, you know, there might not be a Hall of Famer in that group, but there are at least a dozen potential All-Stars. And, you know, if you want to sort it by whatever metric you want, I'm going to choose win share, because I think that's, you know, an important, like, you can be a great player on a bad team, but to be a good player on a good team is, you know, what you shoot for. You have Ben Simmons at the top. Pascal Siakam was the number 27 pick. Two guys that they played the other night, Domantas Sabonis and Malcolm Brogdon, are third and fourth in win share since 2016. Jamal Murray with the Nuggets, another player they saw recently, was number five. Jakob Poeltl, six. Jaylen Brown, who won the Eastern Conference Player of the Week, which, you know, is pretty crazy. They were 2-3 in the 2016 draft, and they're both kind of coming into their own. He's number seven. Buddy Hield, who Pelicans fans might remember as the player they drafted and traded for DeMarcus Cousins, is number eight, and they're going to see him in a few days with the Sacramento Kings. Ivica Zubac is, you know, he's out there with the... He was drafted by the Lakers. He's now on the Clippers.
Starting center.
And then Brandon Ingram's number 10. And believe it or not, Cheick Diallo is number 11 on this list at 5.7. And because he was a big part of the team that went to the playoffs for the Pelicans. But I mean, like, he's part of that group, and he's probably separated himself in the last few weeks in terms of being number one at that.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I saw David Griffin say on Twitter when the announcement was made that Ingram won Western Conference Player of the Week was, B.I. doesn't even really care about that. He cares that the Pelicans are 4-0 in their last four games. And I don't think, like, David Griffin is blowing smoke at all when he says that. I mean, you know, just being up close around Ingram, that guy is all about basketball. He's all about winning. He's very well-liked within the locker room. You know, I talked to Josh Hart about Ingram after the Christmas Day game when he had 31, kind of carried them to that win. And one of the plays that stood out to Josh Hart from the season was they're playing the Phoenix Suns, and it looked like Kelly Oubre had like a wide open dunk. Nobody was within like 15 feet of him, and it was in the first quarter, and Ingram was in foul trouble, and Ingram just like sprints to try to block Oubre's shot. And it was kind of a play where it's like, well, you don't really have much of a chance. You know, I think a lot of guys would have just let Oubre dunk, and Ingram, I mean, he wasn't even successful. He didn't block it, but that stood out to Josh Hart that, like, you know, here we are in like early December, and you know, our leading scorer is busting his hump to try to prevent like a breakaway dunk. You know, it's stuff like that and Ingram's toughness why teammates respect him. And obviously he's a bucket. I mean, the guy is an incredible scorer, but I think the Pelicans are comfortable. You know, they're going to hand him a huge deal this summer, probably a max contract, in part because he's a good person and he plays his butt off and teammates really like him.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't see a ton of emotion out of him, and that kind of goes both ways, you know? You want a guy who will be emotional, but you also don't want a guy who is undermining the team because he's so emotional. You know, that's the DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis kind of corollary, where they were both on the opposite sides of the spectrum. And Cousins hurt the team at times because he would get technical fouls, but then he would help the team by getting everyone fired up. Ingram's like right in the middle. He's very even keeled, but what he's done this season has been incredible. He's averaging career highs in basically every statistic at a much higher volume in terms of, you know, shots taken. But, you know, he's shooting 40% from that 3-point line. I don't think even with the most optimistic expectations you would have expected him to be a 40% 3-point shooter. But to me, the most impressive improvement has been his free throw shooting on a team that really needs it. You know, this is a team that does not shoot free throws well. They have two guards who are averaging well below what you'd hope point guard or shooting guard would take, which is Drew Holiday and Lonzo Ball. Brandon Ingram taking nearly 6 free throws a game is shooting 85%. His career high before this season was 68% at a lower volume. That was his second season. Last year he shot 67%, so he actually got worse season to season from his second to third years. And this year he has gone up nearly 20%. And to me, free throw shooting is, one, about consistency, two, about confidence. And I think if you've seen anything from Ingram and you're trying to figure out why he is a better player, he just looks so confident out there all the time. He's playing with LeBron probably doesn't help in terms of feeling like you can do what you need to do on the court. But I don't know if that's part of it, if he's just kind of, much like Jaylen Brown with the Celtics, just kind of really understanding the game in his fourth season, and then that was a big step. But every time I watch him play, he's just a confident basketball player.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that's been the biggest development so far this season is Ingram establishing himself as a cornerstone piece. And now that we get closer to Zion Williamson's return, I think he's going to be back on the floor at some point in January. I think that's a pretty safe prediction. I can't wait to see what those two guys look like together at the forward spots. You know, I think part of the beauty of Zion is that he can dominate a basketball game without, like, having to have the ball in his hands that much. And that makes me really optimistic about that pairing.
The other thing that he'll do is opponents won't be able to turn their back and stare at Brandon Ingram with the ball like they've been able to do with, you know, as great of a player as Kendrick Williams is in how much effort he puts out.
Yeah, because Zion will back cut and freaking right, dunk on you.
Right. If you're not paying attention to you, he's going to be 3 feet over the rim with the ball in his hands before you have time to turn around. Kendrick Williams, he's great defensively, and he's been a gamer in terms of doing stuff that he's probably not physically suited to do and guarding Anthony Davis at the end of that game. Like, Zion will change that dynamic. You tweeted a picture from the... It was the one where they had, like, 4 defenders. Oh, it was the Warriors game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you tweeted a picture where basically there were 4 defenders all kind of... They were in a zone, but they were literally all just staring at Brandon Ingram with the ball. It reminded me of when Jon Snow is charging at... and it's just, like, literally him and thousands of, just...
Him and a bunch of wildlings.
Right, but they weren't even in the picture. Oh, it was just him just like, all right, I got this. Yeah. Against, like, 100... And that's the type of situation that won't be as common when Zion is able to come back and take that pressure off and be the 5 in those small ball lineups, you know, and really kind of just force the defense to stay honest. And the fact that Ingram has been as efficient as he's been with that amount of defensive attention is probably, you know, another thing that you can point to and say, could he even be better than this? Or, you know, maybe he's just really thriving because it's like a get at me type of mentality, which, you know, I think that does exist.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think the way everything went down in L.A., he was very determined to come into a new situation and have a good year. And, you know, he's proven he's a star. I've had a blast watching him this year. He is a freaking bucket, man. I mean, a legit 3-level scorer. He's just been so fun this year, and he does it night after night after night at 22 years old. I can't wait for this Lakers game.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And the other thing about Ingram that I always forget until I see him live is his arms are ridiculous. Every time I see them, I know that he has insanely long arms, but then you see him, like, there's a picture where he's doing a reverse dunk and the ball is like 6 feet from his body.
Yeah.
Just like, he's the closest thing as like a human version of a pelican. Like if you've ever seen like a pelican spread its wings out and it's just like six times the length of its body, that's what I feel like I'm looking at when I watch Brandon Ingram play basketball.
I wonder what a pelican's wingspan is.
I have a computer in front of me. Let's look it up. Pelican wingspan. Because I know Brandon Ingram is about 7 feet. Well, it's six between 6 and 12 feet.
Okay.
So he's got about 5 feet to go before he reaches full blown pelican. But it seems like they're getting longer every year. I don't know. I don't remember him being that crazy arm length at Duke. So maybe he's like he sleeps in a stretcher and just they get slightly longer every few weeks. But
yep, Brandon Ingram has a pelican like wingspan.
He does. It's it's a match made in heaven. Anyway, that's just me saying nonsense things. But I have enjoyed watching him. It would be really cool if this team could stay in contention and be, you know, a few games out of a playoff spot when Zion comes back. I think just not even for the team, just because I want to see a fan base get excited about this basketball team. And without it being a playoff game, without it being they traded for DeMarcus Cousins and mortgaged their future on like this one team. Like it's a team with a future. It's a team that is playing hard and competing. And it would be, like I said, I was very surprised to see those tickets sell for what they did against the Rockets. And I think the fans want to get excited. And this has been the first sign of that, this 4-game winning streak. And Brandon Ingram was a huge part of it. People want to see him play. So,
signs of life, baby. You got anything else?
I haven't seen the drum in a while.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll bring that back if they beat the Lakers?
I don't think the drum's coming back.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
I think
there's a lot of just bad juju associated with the drum.
Well, they're still not bowing down as far as I know, so we can close with that again.
All right. They're not bowing down. It's true. go mash that subscribe button. Tell your friends. Birdwatch Podcast. We are on Apple. We are on Spotify. Thanks for listening.
Peace.